Welcome to The Pestle, reviewing and breaking down movies to look for insights into the movie-making process. Hosted by Face Tattoos, because nothing says you're friendly like letting strangers draw on your map. Let's dim the lights and start the show.
Welcome, everybody, to The Pestle. Today's show is brought to you by A Man and His Dog. Catch Howard Cooper taking out the trash with his best friend in A Man and His Dog. Welcome, everyone, to The Pestle. I am Wes.
And I am Todd.
We're filmmakers, and this is The Pestle, and we like to dive into films from the standpoint of people who dabble behind and front of the camera, all the things. Writing, directing has been my thing for, you know, the last 10-plus years. Todd, producer full-time, creative director, or heading in that direction, as well as a musician for the past, you know, few decades. And to that point, like, I was joking with you a couple weeks ago. I had sent you the final cut of a music video that we'd been working on for a while, and it's just a lyric video. And I made a joke like, oh man, it's so nice to be done and finally have something else that no one's ever going to watch, you know. And it is just so funny to me, and I know it's self-deprecating, and I think that's kind of the attitude you got to take sometimes. Just because that is the reality of most artists. You know, we cover movies like Monkey Man, and we're going to watch Dev Patel in all his glory. And that's amazing. But most artists don't really ever get those moments, you know, and it's always a fight of why are you doing what you're doing as an artist? Those are the things you have to come to grips with, because if you're doing it in order so that you can be Dev Patel, that's a cool motivation. But if that's your only motivation, man, you're in for a rough one. And you're probably going to quit. Like, at the end of the day, that's not going to sustain you because there's so many roadblocks. Not because anyone's intentionally putting them there. I don't think anyone's necessarily rooting against you, right? But it's just hard. It's hard to get people's attention, and it's as hard as it ever was. I think people look at everything that's happening today and say the democratization of video has made it so much harder to get noticed, and it hasn't. It's probably a wash. There was probably a good like year and a half of a window when you could make anything you wanted, you know, for no money, and there was a platform with people who were looking to watch it. And then after that, whatever 18-month window, and from like 2008 till the summer of 2009. Then there was just too much content. There's people putting stuff out. There's too many avenues to, there's Vine and whatever else. Like, there was just so much stuff out there. And then if you go before that, there was just no avenues. It was too expensive to get something made. And even if you did get it made, there was nowhere to display it. If you didn't have, you know, $10 million in marketing budget, like, it's always been hard. And it's always going to be hard. But the things that sustain you aren't going to be always the big dream. It's going to be the little moments that you find along the way. And there was an email I got a week ago from our friend Byron, friend of the show. He was in our Ex Machina episode. He came on, discussed AI, and he's just the smartest person I've ever known. And it's so funny to say that, because I get an email from him, and he's like, Wes, I just ran across this video in the wild, and I don't remember making it. I asked, you know, my team, like, who did this? This is amazing. And they were like, oh, that was Wes's magic. And I was like, oh. And so I just had to write. And he sends me this beautiful email just saying that no one else could have made this. It took someone that knew him to really make this thing. I was like, wow. And he said a bunch of other lovely things. And it's the kind of thing that will give you some juice for the next, whatever, 2 days, you know, before you go back to whatever life. But it's finding those little moments because, and it's just, to me, it's so funny. I say that he's the smartest guy I've ever known, which is true. But I worked on this for a good 2 months, and I'll link it in the show. It's just a reel of his work. And at one point, he flew me out to New Orleans so that I can capture some B-roll. There was some footage that I wanted that he didn't have already. And I was like, I really want, you know, these shots. So he flew me out there. So I hung out with him for, you know, a weekend.
By the way, this is not that old.
No, it's last year.
How does he not remember? It was like last year. I remember this. Come on, Byron. He's a single track minded guy, right? 100% of one thing, nothing else.
Nothing else. And he does a lot of stuff. Like, this isn't someone doing one thing. He's got several businesses going. He's a speaker, and, you know, he's flying around the world at times. He went to India, you know, actually to do a keynote speech, and they loved it out there. And it's just funny because he never knows what kind of response he's going to get. Some people are like, yeah, okay. Other people are like, whoa, this was amazing. And yeah, so it is funny that he would forget something from a year ago that I took, you know, 2 months on. Although, to be fair, I only showed him at the very end after it was done. And at the time he wrote, I remember the email he wrote was like, this is like Academy level. I mean, he was being bombastic, but it was like, this is amazing. And he was blown away then. And so for him to run into it again and be like, just captured by it, that's pretty cool. But those are the moments like that you're more likely to get. And just like we put out this music video and whatever, a few people watched it. Someone reached out to me, Charlie, one of our listeners. He was like, man, and we geeked out over Kanye because part of the inspiration for the music video was Kanye's Through the Wire. And I'll embed it in the show notes if y'all want to go take a look. And then he and I got to geek out over our love of old Kanye videos. And it ultimately ended up with us joking about one of Kanye's own lyrics, like, I miss the old Kanye, you know. And those are the connections and the things you have to be thinking about as an artist. Like, what's the satisfaction you're getting? Yeah, what are the things that keep you going? Like, you put out a new album and you literally have a vinyl for it that you received last week. Like, what keeps you sustained as an artist that, you know, gets you through the all the dry eras, you know, when you're watching friends around you get put on, get reviews, and, you know, you're not getting anything. Like, no one's recognizing your work. How do you say, you know what, I got to keep going?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think for me, it's just I when I'm done with something, I got to be done with it. Hmm. And then move on to whatever the next thing is. If that's writing another song, cool. If that's seeing the next movie for our podcast, cool. If it's you know, playing with my kids, that's cool. It's literally moment to moment. Not being single-minded anymore. I used to be, this was everything. It was the only thing that I ever cared about or did. And I was miserable. I was like, was not happy because I couldn't find joy in anything else. So I'm just trying to stay grounded and in the moment and do the next thing. And if that's focusing on the record and promoting it and, you know, trying to get some sales going and trying to get some streams going, cool, but not really killing myself about it anymore. And some people, you know, like, I feel like we're in a culture now that celebrates the all-in mentality. And I do think that has a place, 100%. Like, if you want to be the greatest at something, if you want to be the best at something, you have to be single-minded. I'm not saying anything against that. But I did that. I did that for 20 years. And it's okay, but it didn't pan out for me in that way. It didn't like make me happy during. So now I'm just trying to look around me and see what gives me joy. Okay, do that right now. What gives me joy now? Playing my guitar. Okay, do that right now. What gives me joy? Writing a song. Okay, cool. What gives me joy? Eating popcorn and watching a movie. That gives me joy. I'm going to do that right now. What gives me joy? Having dinner with my family. Okay, I'm going to do that. And that's I'm 100% here. So as long as I stay like that, then I can't get upset about something that I'm more proud of than anything else that I've made besides my children. I really am. Like, I listen to my music. I love my music. I listen to it and I'm like, hell yeah. Jesus, if for some like crazy reason, Dave Grohl were to hear this song right now, I think he would love it. You know, or if Taylor Swift were to hear this song right now, I think she would freaking love it. And I am proud of it. I'm proud of every word. I'm proud of every moment, all the sounds, and nobody can take that away from me. And if I had it to do over again, I'd do the exact same thing, exactly the way that I did it. And it feels so good. I know, you know, this as a creator, when you write a script and you go in and you're like, I know exactly what I want this to be. And then you get it done. There's nothing that feels better than knowing that you did everything that you possibly could to make it what it needed to be in your head. And whatever it turns out to be, fine. Like, there were plenty of moments on this record that I did not plan for, nor did I want at the beginning of this. And I was like hesitant to try. But because of the people I surrounded myself with and the way that I let go sometimes, it turned into something that I could never have done myself. And I just freaking love that. And I think it's the same with your films and stuff and all the stuff that you create. So, yeah, I mean, I just try to stay in the moment. Don't think too far down the road and do whatever gives me joy.
Dude, great advice. Speaking of joy and delivering it in full force, what are we covering today, man?
I don't know how you do it. Today, we are covering Dev Patel's Monkey Man. So if you have not seen it, please pause this episode and go watch it because we're going to spoil a bunch of stuff.
Yes, sirree, Bob. We'll look at some of the cinematography, the camera work and visual motifs, as well as some of the story and writing, the emotional engagement, and other such stuff and things and stuff.
All right, and a quick synopsis of the film. An anonymous young man unleashes a campaign of vengeance against the corrupt leaders who murdered his mother and continues to systematically victimize the poor and powerless. I'm going to butcher many of these names, just preparing everyone listening. It's directed by Dev Patel. That's the only one I'm going to get right. Screenplay by Dev Patel and Paul Anguanawella and John Cawley. Cinematography by Sharoni Meyer, featuring Dev Patel as Bobby, Charlotte Copley as Tiger, Peter Bash as Alfonso, Sikandar Kher as Rana, Sobita Dhulipala as Sita, and Makrand Deshpande as Baba Shakti.
Shakti.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I just added letters there. Makrand Deshpande as Baba Shakti.
Nicely done. Man, you pulled off much better than I would have. So glad you do those. yeah, no clip. Everything that I had access to was either what I recorded on my cell phone in the theater, which is frowned upon, or sequences on YouTube. And I don't think we could hear the fight sequences very well. And so... what do you think, man? Dev Patel steps in as a partial writer. This is a story, and he co-wrote it. And by the way, the screenplay is structured. It sounds like he did the first pass, wrote the original script, and then had other people either rewrite or punch it up. But he directed this. Yeah, he starred in it. That's a lot. That's a lot on one's plate. How'd he do, man?
Let me start with the thing. I don't fully know where to start. Okay. So I think if you're going into this movie expecting some kind of new story, you're not going to get it and you'll be upset. Honestly, I think it's very much, and it's been compared to this online that I've seen since. And I think we all kind of like knew it watching the film. That it's compared heavily to John Wick, right? I mean, I think that the lighting, the settings and stuff are very similar. The fighting styles, the purpose, right? The vengeance and everything, the suit at the end. I don't think that it was supposed to be a John Wick version of it. It's an actual story. Like, it's an actual Indian story that was turned into a film that just happened to coincide a lot with John Wick. But I think we also like this kind of story. We like this kind of like beating the man, you know, this like very strong and powerful upper echelon who, you know, lives in this tower, literally, that we can't reach, extending ourselves up there, our hero extending themselves up there at not caring if they die, like having no, there's nothing that they can lose, you know, kind of thing. Giving everything to then come out victorious in the end and destroy the man, right? And that's what we get. And we get that sense at the end. We get that sense of like completion when he defeats, you know, the main bad guy, the boss, the head honcho. Yeah,
Baba Shakti.
Baba Shakti, yeah. And I will say that the fight scenes to me, and I think that you agreed, we talked about this because we actually watched this film together.
For a change.
Because I happened to be in Austin last week. And I was like, let's go to a movie, of course. So I think that the fight scenes are way better than John Wick. There's never been a fight scene in John Wick that I've seen, in any of the John Wicks that I've seen, that are better than the fight scenes in this film.
That, like, kitchen fight sequence.
Dude, I don't know. That one scene, it was the entire movie for me. That one scene, I'm like, okay, everything has led up to this moment. Yeah. And now not only is it perfectly choreographed, I mean, I it feels like every hit is landing, but the cinematography is fantastic. The angles, there's a lot of up angles, and it's wide. It's a wide shot too. So you feel like everything is, like, everything is surrounding him, but it's still out of the way enough for him to do a lot of movement. It's a crazy feeling that you get. So when, like, he picks up the coffee canister or whatever, and he hits the guy over the head, the camera zooms in when that happens, and it's just really well done. Really well done. And Dev Patel is an action star. That guy, I don't know if it's, what I felt was his quick movements were so pointed and perfectly timed that it really felt like he was dodging things. Like, if someone was trying to do a sweep and he picked up his foot, he'd pick it up and put it down really fast. It wasn't just he picked it up. He'd go whoop up really fast. And so it was obviously choreographed, but it didn't feel that way. It felt just like, I know what you're doing before you know what you're doing, and I'm going to destroy you because of it. And so, yeah, that kitchen scene is fantastic. He's just amazing at it. His physique is perfect. He's not, like, overly built. He looks like a guy who doesn't eat enough, right? Who's, like, you know, been scrounging a lot of his life, but all that he has is muscle on him. He's like 2% body fat. He looks fantastic. That being said, it is way too long. It is way too long. I mean, they needed to cut 30 minutes or more off of this movie to me. And it would have been a way better movie. I mean, you can tell this story. We know this story, even if we don't know the story, because it's told in a different way all over the world. So I could have seen, you know, probably a good half hour cut out of this film and walked away feeling very full, like everything that needed to be done was done, you know, and like the complete. I really liked the performances. I liked a lot of the cinematography, but I felt sick a lot, and I didn't. I know we sat close, but I can sit close in a lot of movies and not feel sick. There was almost everything was handheld. And there were some points where it was pointless for this to be handheld. You know, why are we handheld? Why do I feel unstable all the time? Even in the quiet moments when it could have been more. I mean, whenever there were moments where it wasn't handheld, which were few and far between, I was like, thank God. Oh my gosh, I'm going to be sick. And that takes a lot for me, because I don't get that way at all, ever. So that would be my one qualm on cinematography there, is that I just wish that they could have, like, stabilized a little bit more and saved the handheld stuff for fight scenes or for scenes where we want to feel unstable on purpose, right? So could be a little bit more pointed. I thought Dev Patel's performance was fantastic, not just in the fight scenes, in the actual, you know, the acting scenes where he's trying to, like, convey emotion. I thought he was amazing at that. Yeah. So that's my cliff notes there.
Nice. I mostly agree. I think so. Since we're already on cinematography, there was this comment. I was looking through clips online, and someone, this YouTuber, Cold-Blooded Boy 15, made a comment that I was like, oh, that's a great observation, which plays partly into what you're talking about. And the comment they made was, notice how raw the camera movements are when he's not as good at fighting in the first half. Then notice how fluid everything is once he's trained. That's great directing. And that's largely true, but it doesn't cancel out what you're saying, in the sense of they probably added to sequences or scenes that don't necessarily need it. They could have pulled back and therefore made it more pointed, because I was on the cusp. I didn't get quite to the point of of like getting a little nauseous, but they maybe had another 30 seconds before I got there. Like they literally stopped right when I just couldn't take another, you know, minute of it. But that is a good observation. I would say the other addition to that is something you pointed out, which was they also go wider. They went from longer lenses to wider lenses once we got to the end, which helps stabilize or gives a feeling of more stabilization, because a little bit of movement doesn't add up to a lot of movement. Like the longer the lens is and you move the camera just a little bit, you're shifting everything in frame. Whereas if you go really wide and move the camera the same amount of movement, because of how wide it is, you're just not shifting the field of view that much. And so those little things really do add up. But that said, everything I loved about this movie was the action. It was just some of the best directed action that I've seen. And I know exactly what you're saying about like the difference between this and John Wick. Like John Wick, at points, you can feel them telegraphing the choreography, where maybe someone pauses a fraction of a second to let the co-star catch up, whoever he's fighting with. Maybe they're a little ahead of him, or maybe they're a little behind him. And so because they're doing these really long takes, like you can feel the choreography in it. Whereas here, they do a great, wonderful job of using long takes, but not so exhaustively that your guys can't go full speed. Like, okay, we're going to do this, 10 second shot, and it's going to be just 10 seconds. This is a 90 second fight scene, but we're not going to do a 90 second take. We're going to do a 10 second take here, 10 or 5 here, and then it's all going to add together into a really strong, because you never feel them telegraphing. Like they're going full speed, and that's that feeling that you're talking about. And if they want, they could add and post another 5%, like ramp it up another 5 or 10%, and it's just going to make it work that much better. They don't have to do that, and I'd be surprised if they did that very much or at all, because it's just so tightly done, like to the point where you feel like everyone's acting in earnest. And like that guy's really going for him, and he just flings open the microwave and bashes his head in. And you're just like, oh, I didn't see that coming, because it looked like he was out of moves. And suddenly, because he threw his, coffee pot or whatever, and it's just all motivated within the context of the scene. And that just it makes you lean forward. Like I leaned forward twice. I watched it twice. And both times I said, whoa, this is amazing. Those are the moments that were just absolutely crushing it for me. That said, the stuff that wasn't working for me was going to be much more in the vein of story. Because to your point, this isn't a brand new story, and that's fine. What story is, right? There's very few that come out and then you're like, oh man, I hadn't really seen that before. And especially with action films, like I don't know how many action films have been fresh over the last, 50 years. I mean, it would probably take you going like adding up all the action films in the last 20 years to be like, oh, that one was new and that one was new. And there would maybe be four or five of those, right? But walking in, I didn't know what to expect other than this is probably an action film. And even that I wasn't completely sure about because I hadn't seen a trailer or anything. The only thing that I had heard was people comparing it to John Wick. And I was like, okay, so there's something John Wick-y about it. And that was it. So I walked in, I didn't know this was even going to be in India. Like I literally knew nothing about this film. And therefore I get to sit back and see a completely new story as it's presented to me. And maybe that was to its detriment. Maybe going in knowing something or having seen a trailer, I might have enjoyed a little bit more, because there's just not that much emotional engagement. And I think that's because there's a lack of stakes in the film. Stakes are what happens if someone doesn't accomplish what they want. And if he doesn't get what he wants, there's really no big immediate consequence. Like the things that are happening, I guess, keep happening. But the only thing that's really keeping us engaged is that we like Dev Patel. Beyond that, it's just there's not a lot to go on. There's no big setups. And this is a tricky thing, because if you go through half of our episodes, you would hear us talk about how we really don't like exposition. And it's not that we don't like exposition. It's that we don't like poorly done exposition.
Right.
And that's such a fine line to walk, because this movie is giving you an opportunity to discover and to watch and observe, but there's just not quite enough information doled out in a way that makes you lean into and care about the character. Bobby, or Kid, as he's called in the credits. Bobby is a fake name that he gives himself, right? That's Bobby's bleaching powder or something like that. And to that end, like, they don't tell you anything about this character. They give you hints, and those hints are supposed to be enough to sustain you and to at least understand why he's doing what he's doing. But it's not enough to make you care about why he's doing what he's doing. And so the first, whatever, half hour of the film, we're watching him go through the motions of track down someone. And when he's finally in the office and he sees the picture on the desk of this guy, and you do these quick flashbacks, you immediately know, okay, this is a revenge story. Because again, I didn't know that coming in. I was like, okay, so this guy did something to him. He hurt him somehow. Cool. But that's not enough. It takes until you're halfway through the movie before you get your big emotional payoff or setup, whichever one it is. At that point, it's not even clear. And it is strong. Don't get me wrong. Like, you go back and you see him as a kid and you see this tyrant going through and burning down his neighborhood and then brutally killing his mother. That, yeah, you know what? That I was definitely all in, you know, emotionally in that moment. But it wasn't enough to then keep me, I guess, emotionally compelled through the rest. Because beyond that, what that was done. Now, what else is there that he's really, you know, that's relying on him? There's really nothing. And he comes into this community, right, which is this beautiful community of outcasts. And I love the imagery that they're using here. You know, it's very inclusive. And I love the use of combining Shiva with, was it Parvati? Sorry, I'm not intimately familiar with all the Indian gods and deities. But they combine in the statue, these two gods of war and peace. And I love that imagery, you know, that's then reflected into one of the characters, you know, this trans person. And it's, I think, invoking this question of, can you have one without the other? Can you have peace without war? Can you have love without war? Like, are these things necessary in order to get the other thing? And in this movie's point of view, you do need both, because that's ultimately the way it plays out, right? That's a great community. It's just never clear that they're relying on him. In fact, it feels the opposite. And this is what I mean by stakes, that he needs them. There's stakes for them, but there's no stakes for him, because ultimately they're not relying on him. They go to support him. They show up in his time of need, and that's great. But it's not the way you want to set up your stakes, I think, if you want to have more emotional investment. Because you get to the end and he kills Baba Shakti, and even that sequence is brutal and bloody, which is fine, but it also undercuts the stakes once again. You never feel the danger for Bobby. You never feel that he's at risk of not achieving his goal. The closest you get with that is, you know, the halfway mark whenever he fails his mission. Right, he can't pull the trigger, and then he pulls it too late, and then it becomes this fight, and that's a really awesome escape sequence. But ultimately, you know, that's the closest we get to, you know, he's not going to achieve his goal. But and even then, the stakes are just that he dies and the movie's over. That's not enough to really push you forward into the end of your film. And with that, his transformation felt a little unearned, because there's this really nice music montage. Right, and you have that communal element to create a sense of internal change, which is good, but hitting a punching bag doesn't feel like an incredible skill set that ultimately reveals why he's able to now do these things he wasn't able to do before.
Yeah, great point.
And then ultimately, it didn't feel like his big hurdle was emotional or communal, which they are, but they don't set that up. It's just revealed that he needs these things, not him understanding or feeling the lack of these things in the first half of the film. And so he gets a payoff that was never set up in the first place.
Yeah, that's a great, wow, that is a great point here. Like, in other versions of this, let's say he's the outlier in all the ways in that community. You don't see, first off, why is there a punching bag there? No one else looks like they've ever hit a punching bag ever in their life. So he's the outlier there. So him developing into this other part of him that gives him strength is less about him punching a bag and more about him embracing the attitude of this community that lives in a place that doesn't want them, happily finds joy in this place where it's almost impossible for them to find joy together, right? And he doesn't really do that. He just strengthens his ability to punch, to like fight, which is, well, at the time, we don't know that they're able to fight. We find out later that they are. But we don't know that, we just see them cheering him on. Mm-hmm. I'd almost rather see him the other way around, not working on his fighting skills, but working on his happiness, working on his like meditation, his like ability to assimilate into the community that gives him that strength that we then internalize as a viewer. It's a great point. I didn't even see that, honestly.
Yeah, because at that point then, because they touch on this, they touch on all these things in the film. They're just not underscored in a way that they're set up, and therefore you understand the payoff. Because they touch on him, finding another reason to fight, finding his purpose to fight. But even that then circles back around to For Your Mother. And so it's so circular without really giving you that sense of a half circle first, and then we're now completing it. It's just, the setups are really not there to give you these payoffs. In the same way that we get a hint, like one of the people in the community hits the punching bag, and it's like, oh, they can fight, and that's kind of how they end that sequence, if I remember correctly. And so they hint at it, but I think setting up where his real problem is, that he's pursuing this purely out of revenge, is the problem. And whenever he transitions that into, I'm now fighting for community, that could have been a really big turning point. And that's, again, it's hinted at. It's just not set up properly, in my opinion, in a way that allows you to understand that as the point of his transformation. It's very muddy. And adding those little moments of clarity is what would make this a really great 2-hour film. To your point. And if you're not going to do that, then I think cutting it down to just the meat, then yeah, shave off 20-30 minutes, and it's a much tighter, more action-packed experience where you're not relying on the drama to push, some kind of emotional state. Instead, you're just relying on that pure rage factor to keep pushing him forward. And then what you might want to do is restructure so that in the opening, you do the classic, we're opening on the flashback. This is who he is, and this is what happened, and now you understand his motivation, and it's just a bullet flying through the film at that point.
Exactly.
And that's fine. Like, that'll get you a lot of mileage. And to that end, like, I think there's just other things that don't really have as many payoffs that they're setting up without any payoffs. And so, for instance, Alfonso is his little sidekick buddy who has the funny little car that he calls whatever, Nicki Minaj. He's just not really utilized. Like, he gets in the car during his big escape whenever he fails his first mission, and now he's fleeing. And this guy gets in. Why does he get in the car? Like, he doesn't really serve a function in the story beyond as a tool to get Bobby in and out of the building, right? Bobby uses him to work his way up, and then he steals his car, and then the guy's like, I guess take me with you kind of thing. He jumps in, right? Bobby says, get in, and he's like, okay. There's not a lot of understanding for that. The closest they get to giving you some character motivation for that moment is they kind of throw it in right before that whole sequence kicks off, where we're seeing Alfonso getting mocked by Rana Singh, and that just is there to create a little sympathy and a little contrast and between Alfonso and the rest of the gang. And I was like, oh, he's an outsider too. Therefore, story logic. And you just need more than that. You need him to come for full circle to help again for new reasons, to say that I understand Baba Shakti, is an enemy. Rana is an enemy. And therefore, I'm helping you now proactively instead of accidentally. And so Alfonso just never... And if you're not going to do those things, I think it's best if you just cut him out. and instead make the relationship direct with, God, I forgot her name, not Sita. I forgot to put her name in the show notes, but basically Rana's, you know, right-hand woman who's running the house, the restaurant, and just making it more direct. And now she's getting used and you feel okay with her getting used. You don't need to make an excuse for any of those things. And then he steals her car. And then the other thing that kind of rubbed me wrong is during that escape, when he gets to the car, like the guard is asleep at his station. That felt a little too convenient for the character's sake. It should have been inconvenient somehow. This is another obstacle that he has to overcome. And if you're not going to do that, then just take the guard out entirely.
Yeah, I was just going to say, just take out the guard.
Yeah. It's just an unadded thing to make the audience be like, oh, really? That was nice. It's just kind of pointless. I don't know. I think all those things kind of just like at the beginning, and this undercuts the communal aspect, because at the very beginning of the film, whenever he's tracking down that woman, there's this extended sequence of her wallet being stolen and then passed over to Bobby. Like, that's a really cool sequence, but it felt wrong for a number of reasons. The fact that all these people just kind of know about this purse, it's adding to this idea that there's a community, but then it's undercutting the idea that he's not a part of it by then including him in it. And so, if anything, it should have been they don't give him the purse, and now he has to go and track down this purse because they don't know. What does it matter to you? Who are you? You're not one of us. Like, I think that was an opportunity to demonstrate that he's an outsider to his own community. And that could have then set you up for him needing other people because he's constantly going on his own. He's constantly fighting against the grain. And so that was a missed opportunity, I think. And then he gets this purse and no one's opened it up or taken it for themselves. That just, it felt off.
Yeah.
Yeah. That said, I think there's some really nice visual things that are happening, just to go back to some of the cinematography, which was the title shot, right? There's that him walking down the hallway and they put Monkey Man on the screen. That's a dope title sequence because he's walking down this blue-green hallway. It's just lit beautifully. And then the dead center of it, there's this orange light just splitting the color. And it's just him walking right into that orange light. And I think it's this really sweet visual motif incorporating the sunlight visuals that represent Bobby becoming Hanuman. And they do that throughout the entire film. Like, if you're looking for it, you'll see at least two or three more scenes, if not more, because I only noticed it, you know, my second watch through, and I wasn't super paying attention to it. But they'll do these things where they put a light right above his head and they'll shoot the camera straight up.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's like the sun is directly over him. And it's like he's constantly reaching or that he's devoured the sun. But they're playing into that whole Hanuman aspect of him devouring the sun. And then, of course, you get to the very end when he sees Baba Shakti, right? And it's just playing right into Baba Shakti as the demon king, right? And they've used the crown as this visual metaphor for Baba Shakti. And he's finally gotten to the top floor, right? And you see him and he's just reflecting all the shiny, you know, the pool is reflecting and he's in this pool of white light. And it's just playing all on this idea of Hanuman, the imagery of Hanuman devouring the sun. He sees a shiny object in the sky and he thinks it's a mango and he devours it and the gods curse him. And it's playing on all of those, you know, visual metaphors. And it's just wonderful. Like, the cinematography, the directing here are incredibly strong. And I'm excited to see what else Dev Patel does. If he brings it back, then suddenly all these things that weren't utilized, he can now utilize. Alfonso can now take on new meaning in the sequel, or not. Maybe he uses this as a running thing, or he's done and he's off to direct more things. I'm excited whatever he does next. I'm there for it for sure. But there was just a handful of things that I think could have made me more emotionally engaged than what, you know, ended up playing out. Yeah.
Agreed. I think that it fell victim to a little bit of kind of like a Bollywood style in Hollywood, you know, in some ways too. I think the length is part of that. I mean, if you, there's a lot of Indian films that are just really long and they're well done and stuff, but they're really long. And some of the dialogue too is like very direct and on the nose. And it, it's almost, it's just too much. It's like, no, let's be a little bit cryptic and treat the audience a little bit like they, you know, you don't need to drag them along with you, you know, let them come to you kind of thing. And they don't, at least a lot of films that I've seen, they haven't done that. And I feel like this fell victim to that in a lot, in some ways, which is interesting because I just looked it up and it wasn't released in India. And they said the reason was because of, you know, it's calling out a lot of the, you know,
politics.
Like the, you know, fight against the man kind of thing. But I think it's a great first stab for Dev. And yes, I agree. Whatever he does, I'm going to watch it. You know, I love that he was in it. Like, it would have been not worth watching to me with someone else. I think that he's just a freaking powerhouse of an action star. And this movie got good when he got good at being an action star.
Mm.
So just be an action star, man. Just like be badass the entire hour and a half long of a film. And I just take my money. It doesn't have to be. And the other thing is, you know, I love everything that you're saying about the story. And I think that would have, all of those things would have made such a better story. But I almost don't even care in a lot of ways because I just want to see Dev kick ass the entire time. Like John Wick, you know, you say, I know it's its own story. It's not John Wick. It's its own story. And that's great. But make him John Wick and kicking ass the entire time where no one can touch him. And yes, that signed me up. It doesn't have to be a brand new story. I think we talk about this sometimes on the podcast that you don't have to reinvent the wheel. I think a similar story with a new star is enough to get people to want to go to a theater and watch this stuff on a 50-foot screen. You know, like, it definitely is for me. And I think that there's been some really good reviews on this film, but I think that most of it is because of Dev and because of these scenes we talked about, these action scenes, less about the actual story. Because I think, yeah, I agree. There were, you know, considerable holes in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything you're saying, I completely agree. My Dev Patel is such a joy to watch on screen, and I'm hoping he needs more vehicles. Whether he's directing them or not, like, he deserves to be more leading man. And I don't know if he's just not getting the opportunities or if it's just he is very selective on the projects he takes. But after seeing him in, like, Lion, I don't know why he just isn't everywhere. Like, he should be crushing it. And it's hard to know what the reason for that is. Maybe there's an interview where he talks about this. But, like, The Green Knight, fantastic. Like, that movie only works to the extent that it does because of Dev Patel. And I want more Dev on screen as my cry. Yeah. Like, I just, the more Dev Patel I can get, the happier I'll be. Especially in movies. Like, I'll take him in series. Like, I know he's in The Newsroom and he's great, but it's not his vehicle, you know?
Yeah.
And so the more, give me more Dev. Give me directing and just acting and starring and kicking ass, because I didn't know he had that in him. And seeing it afterwards, I can't unsee it. I can't unknow this knowledge.
It's a great way to put it. Yeah. Yeah. He can't do any kind of rom-com now.
Yeah, you know? Right.
He's like Liam Neeson. Like, I don't, you can't love human beings. You're just there to kill people, right?
100%. So I think that's basically all I got.
Cool.
Nice. So what are you going to recommend this week?
This week I just finished, and we talked about it before this episode, I just finished Fallout on Amazon Prime Video, which Jonathan Nolan had a hand in. Did he write it?
This is confounding me, to be honest, because whenever this originally was announced, it was going to be him and Lisa Joy's vehicle. Like,
yeah.
And then once you get into the show, it gives a created by to two other people. And so I don't know if that's just them playing more of a producer role, but everything leading into that, it sounded like this is their thing and they are writing it and they're behind it 100%. And so I don't know if it's them being kind and trying to help, you know, two other people, you know, rise in the industry who clearly deserve it. But yeah, so I'm not entirely sure. I do know that they were the ones who were announced and attached to it during the early announcements for it.
Gotcha. I mean, they're in the credits too at the end of every episode. So I can't remember what it was, if they produced it or what. I don't know. But it's a lot of fun, and it's really great. And I don't expect that on Amazon Video, honestly. And it's shot very, very like a movie. I can tell they're using anamorphic lenses, and a lot of like the scenes that are not obviously CG of like the landscape and everything, and like the scenes in the bunkers and stuff, I can tell because like there's one shot of these people. They're sitting at a desk and they have a name tag in front of them, and it's out of focus, but everything in the center is like in focus, and it's just shot really cool, really well. It feels like a movie every single episode. The acting is great. I didn't play the video games, so I can't even speak to how close they are, but I've heard that it's very close, and it's very it like pays an homage to the games in a really great way. I feel like the set design is incredible. It's like out of this world. I'm just watching these sets and I'm thinking, this is big budget Nolan set, you know, Christopher Nolan set, you know, which makes me think, oh yeah, it's Jonathan. Yeah, there you go. There you go. His big brother influenced him or whatever. His big brother, little brother. I don't know. Anyway, fantastic. If you have not seen it, you should go watch it. There's 8 episodes, I think. And it's a lot of fun. It's graphic at times. So I would, especially the beginning. So just be ready for that. But yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Completely agree. Like, yeah, I've played Fallout 3, 4 in New Vegas, and I'm currently going back and playing the original Fallout 1 from like 1997. And ooh, watching that show, like I would watch a couple episodes and then the next day I would feel like I had been playing the game. That's how close it felt. Yeah, it was like, am I playing? No, I haven't played Fallout in like several years. Yeah, so completely agree. I'm going to recommend another film that was shot by the same cinematographer, Sharon Meyer, and it's called Mean Creek. It's from almost 20 years ago, or actually 20 years ago. And this is it's got a ton of stars that would come to be stars, and or at least from what I remember. But it's another revenge film of a different kind. This is kids. It's just kids who aren't very nice to each other. And it's incredibly dramatic. It's a very indie kind of film. Check that out. I'm sure it's probably streaming somewhere, although it might be buried at this point. Who knows? It wasn't a big hit when it came out. It was kind of well known by people like us. So if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. It's an interesting film. And stay tuned for next week. Oh, we have an art spotlight, but we already talked about it. Go check the show notes for the Mad Valley lyric video, Take It All, and you'll see.
Let's not glaze over it. This thing was awesome. It was, you hand drew every frame like the Aha video back in the day, and it just is it. The first time you showed it to me, it blew my mind immediately. And this was just the first, you know, few seconds of it that you showed me, and I was just like, oh my god, this is what you're doing. This is insane. So much time, so much effort. It is so fun. And it's my song. I don't even care about the song. I'm just like, this video is so freaking cool. Amazing job on that.
Thanks, man. Yeah, so two of the videos that I've always wanted to pay homage to is Kanye's Through the Wire. Since the moment that came out, I was just blown away. At the time, everything that was coming out as far as rap videos was very like Hype Williams 90s style, like big flashy cars and hot girls in bikinis and gunplay, like all these kind of gangster motifs, you know, and that was fine. I mean, I enjoyed those videos, don't get me wrong, but whenever someone else comes and does something completely different and it's artistic and it's not trying to be all this bravado, it's very humble, and what it's telling the story of Kanye finally becoming Kanye, and as someone who couldn't get a shot, you know, and he finally makes a breakthrough, and the breakthrough is him almost dying. Like Through the Wire is him literally rapping through wired teeth because he got in a car wreck and he ate the steering wheel and it crushed his jaw. And so they had to wire his jaw shut through all the reconstructive surgery. And telling the story,
he's literally rapping that song with his mouth wired shut.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so if you listen to his lack of enunciation, that's why, right? You can only articulate so much with your jaw wired. And so he made this music video of telling his story of becoming a rock, you know, member of the Rockefeller, Jay-Z and Dame Dash's, you know, label. And it's done through this bulletin board snapshots of moments in his career and his life. And I just loved it. And so I was like, I'd love to figure out a way. And I've tried a number of other times and I was like, this just isn't the right moment for it. And it's one of those tools in the tool belt. And same thing with Aha. I mean, it's one of the most well-known music videos of all time. And who doesn't want to make something like that until you actually get into making it? And then you're like, I don't want to do this. No, but it was actually really fun. I got to vibe out like playing movies. I watched so much time to do it that I watched all of the Lord of the Rings extended editions. I went through all of Game of Thrones, rewatched all of that. Yeah. And watched, you know, the Whoa. First two or three seasons of The Wire, and a bunch of other things. Like I watched so much TV in the background while I was, you know, drawing those frames that you see during the choruses. And yeah, I mean, it was just, it's bonkers. And the hard thing, and I think this is it, the case with all art, when you're making something, the hard thing is when you get close to the finish line. Like, Todd, I know you haven't run any marathons. I've run so many. And for me, the hard part of running the marathons is...
Plural.
Plural. I've run one. Todd, how many marathons have you run? Can you count them?
I don't know.
A lot. It's so many, can't actually count them. And so, but for me, getting close to the finish line was much harder than the halfway mark because you can see it and you're close and you just want to push your body and you just can't. And so getting close to the end of the project, it's so easy to want to just throw it away and be like, rush to the end and just be done with it. And it's hard to stop yourself. And for me, having movies on in the background was really great to keep myself mentally engaged with what I'm trying to make. Yeah. Anyway, check it out. It's in the show notes. And stay tuned for next week. We're going to take a look at Will Ferrell and one of the few roles that I really, really love him in, which is this movie called Stranger Than Fiction. It's him and is it Emma Thompson.
Yep.
And we'll take a look at that, see what's going on there. And if you're enjoying the show, don't forget, subscribe, drop us a review. Let us know if you're enjoying what we got going on. And if you want to comment on this episode, you can do that at thepestlepodcast.com/monkeyman.
And the quote of the day today is very apropos. From Keanu Reeves. Grief changes shape, but it never ends. That's hard, man. That's hardcore. It's so accurate. And I think this is a great choice that you made describing this film, because that's how I like kind of felt at the end there of like, okay, now what? You know? He kills Baba Shakti. Now what? You know? And then he collapses. That was a good ending. You know, I thought that was a pretty strong ending, but yeah, what a great quote, man.
Yeah, and I think most people know everything Keanu has gone through in his life, and it's like, man, that's reassuring as a human to be like, you know, it's okay. Some of these things don't go away. Those are scars, right? And that's okay. That's a part of the experience, and you carry those things with you, and it's okay to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Strong. Wow. Good on you, Keanu. All right. Thank you guys so much for joining us. I had a great time talking about Monkey Man. Man, you had some great insight, Wes. Thank you so much for that. Make sure to subscribe. Review us wherever you get your podcast. Share us with your friends. If there's a film that you'd like to see us pick apart, we'd love to hear from you. Let us know. Who knows? Maybe we'll cover it. Until next time, I'm Todd.
I'm Wes.
Go watch some movies. Yeah.